Chapter 48. Descriptive of a dinner at Mr. Ralph Nickleby's, and of the manner in which the company entertained themselves, before dinner, at dinner, and after dinner. The bile and rancor of the worthy Miss Knagg undergoing no diminution during the remainder of the week, but rather augmenting with every successive hour, and the honest ire of all the young ladies rising, or seeming to rise, in exact proportion to the good spinster's indignation, and both waxing very hot every time Miss Nickleby was called upstairs. It will be readily imagined that that young lady's daily life was none of the most cheerful or enviable kind. She hailed the arrival of Saturday night, as a prisoner would a few delicious hours' respite from slow and wearing torture, and felt that the poor pittance for her first week's labor would have been dearly and hardly earned, had its amount been trebled. When she joined her mother, as usual, at the street corner, she was not a little surprised to find her in conversation with Mr. Ralph Nickleby. But her surprise was soon redoubled, no less by the matter of their conversation, than by the smooth and altered manner of Mr. Nickleby himself. "Ah, my dear," apostrophe said Ralph, "we were at that moment talking about you." "Apostrophe, indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe," replied Kate, shrinking, though she scarce knew why, from her uncle's cold glistening eye. "That instant, apostrophe," said Ralph, "I was coming to call for you, making sure to catch you before you left, but your mother and I have been talking over family affairs, and the time has slipped away so rapidly, apostrophe, well now, hasn't it?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," interposed Mrs. Nickleby, quite insensible to the sarcastic tone of Ralph's last remark. "Upon my word, I couldn't have believed it possible, that such a Kate, my dear, you're to dine with your uncle at 6:30 tomorrow." Apostrophe, triumphing in having been the first to communicate this extraordinary intelligence, Mrs. Nickleby nodded, and smiled a great many times, to impress its full magnificence on Kate's wondering mind, and then flew off, at an acute angle, to a committee of ways and means. "Let me see," apostrophe said the good lady. "Your black silk frock will be quite dress enough, my dear, with that pretty little scarf, and a plain band in your hair, and a pair of black silk stock." "Dear, dear," apostrophe cried Mrs. Nickleby, flying off at another angle, "if I had but those unfortunate amethysts of mine, you recollect them, Kate, my love, how they used to sparkle, you know, but your papa, your poor dear papa, ah! There never was anything so cruelly sacrificed as those jewels were, never." Apostrophe, apostrophe, overpowered by this agonizing thought, Mrs. Nickleby shook her head, in a melancholy manner, and applied her handkerchief to her eyes. "I don't want them, Mama, indeed," apostrophe said Kate. "Forget that you ever had them." Apostrophe, Lord, Kate, my dear, apostrophe rejoined Mrs. Nickleby, pettishly, "how like a child you talk. 4 and 20 silver teaspoons, brother-in-law, 2 gravies, 4 salts, all the amethysts, necklace, brooch, and earrings all made away with, at the same time, and I saying, almost on my bended knees, to that poor good soul, why don't you do something, Nicholas? Why don't you make some arrangement? I am sure that anybody who was about us at that time will do me the justice to own that if I said that once, I said it 50 times a day. Didn't I, Kate, my dear? Did I ever lose an opportunity of impressing it on your poor papa? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, no, Mama, never, apostrophe," replied Kate. And to do Mrs. Nickleby justice, she never had lost, and to do married ladies as a body justice, they seldom do lose any occasion of inculcating similar golden precepts, whose only blemish is the slight degree of vagueness and uncertainty in which they are usually enveloped. "Ah, apostrophe, apostrophe," said Mrs. Nickleby, with great fervor, "if my advice had been taken at the beginning, well, I have always done my duty, and that's some comfort." Apostrophe, when she had arrived at this reflection, Mrs. Nickleby sighed, rubbed her hands, cast up her eyes, and finally assumed a look of meek composure, thus importing that she was a persecuted saint, but that she wouldn't trouble her hearers by mentioning a circumstance which must be so obvious to everybody. Now, apostrophe said Ralph, with a smile, which, in common with all other tokens of emotion, seemed to skulk under his face, rather than play boldly over it to return to the point from which we have strayed. I have a little party of gentlemen with whom I am connected in business just now, at my house tomorrow, and your mother has promised that you shall keep house for me. I am not much used to parties, but this is one of business, and such fooleries are an important part of it sometimes. You don't mind obliging me? Apostrophe, mind. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Nickleby. My dear Kate, why apostrophe, pray, apostrophe, interrupted Ralph, motioning her to be silent. I spoke to my niece. Apostrophe, I shall be very glad, of course, uncle, apostrophe, replied Kate. But I am afraid you will find me awkward and embarrassed. Apostrophe, oh no, apostrophe, said Ralph. Come when you like, in a hackney coach I'll pay for it. Good night, God bless you. Apostrophe, the blessing seemed to stick in Mr. Ralph Nickleby's throat, as if it were not used to the thoroughfare, and didn't know the way out. But it got out somehow, though awkwardly enough. And having disposed of it, he shook hands with his two relatives, and abruptly left them. What a very strongly marked countenance your uncle has! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby, quite struck with his parting look. I don't see the slightest resemblance to his poor brother. Apostrophe, mamma! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Kate reprovingly. To think of such a thing! Apostrophe, no, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby, musing. There certainly is none. But it's a very honest face. Apostrophe, the worthy matron made this remark with great emphasis and elocution, as if it comprised no small quantity of ingenuity and research. And, in truth, it was not unworthy of being classed among the extraordinary discoveries of the age. Kate looked up hastily, and as hastily looked down again. What has come over you, my dear, in the name of goodness? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Mrs. Nickleby, when they had walked on, for some time, in silence. I was only thinking, mamma, apostrophe, answered Kate. Thinking, apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Mrs. Nickleby. And indeed plenty to think about too. Your uncle has taken a strong fancy to you, that's quite clear, and if some extraordinary good fortune doesn't come to you, after this, I shall be a little surprised, that's all. Apostrophe, with this, she launched out into sundry anecdotes of young ladies, who had £1,000 notes given them in reticules, by eccentric uncles, and of young ladies who had accidentally met amiable gentlemen of enormous wealth at their uncle's houses, and married them, after short but ardent courtships. And Kate, listening first in apathy, and afterwards in amusement, felt, as they walked home, something of her mother's sanguine complexion gradually awakening in her own bosom, and began to think that her prospects might be brightening, and that better days might be dawning upon them. Such as hope, heaven's own gift to struggling mortals, pervading, like some subtle essence from the skies, all things, both good and bad, as universal as death, and more infectious than disease. The feeble winter sun and winter suns in the city are very feeble indeed might have brightened up, as he shone through the dim windows of the large old house, on witnessing the unusual sight which one half-furnished room displayed. In a gloomy corner, where, for years, had stood a silent moldy pile of merchandise, sheltering its colony of mice, and frowning, a dull and lifeless mass, upon the paneled room, save when, responding to the roll of heavy wagons, in the street without, it quaked with sturdy tremblings, and caused the bright eyes of its tiny citizens to grow brighter still with fear, and struck them motionless, with attentive ear and palpitating heart, until the alarm had passed away in this dark corner, was arranged, with scrupulous care, all Kate's little finery for the day, Each article of dress partaking of that indescribable air of jauntiness and individuality which empty garments, whether by association, or that they become molded, as it were, to the owner's form will take, in eyes accustomed to, or picturing, the wearer's smartness. In place of a bale of moldy goods, there lay the black silk dress, the neatest possible figure in itself. The small shoes, with toes delicately turned out, stood upon the very pressure of some old iron weight, and a pile of harsh discolored leather had unconsciously given place to the very same little pair of black silk stockings, which had been the objects of Mrs. Nickleby's peculiar care. Rats and mice, and such small gear, had long ago been starved, or had emigrated to better quarters. And, in their stead, appeared gloves, bands, scarfs, hairpins, and many other little devices, almost as ingenious in their way as rats and mice themselves, for the tantalization of mankind. About and among them all, moved Kate herself, not the least beautiful or unwonted relief to the stern, old gloomy building. In good time, or in bad time, as the reader likes to take it, for Mrs. Nickleby's impatience went a great deal faster than the clocks at that end of the town, and Kate was dressed to the very last hairpin a full hour, and a half before it was at all necessary to begin to think about it. In good time, or in bad time, the toilet was completed. And it being at length the hour agreed upon for starting, the milkman fetched a coach from the nearest stand, and Kate, with many adieu to her mother, and many kind messages to Miss La Creevy, who was to come to tea, seated herself in it, and went away in state, if ever anybody went away in state in a hackney coach yet. And the coach, and the coachman, and the horses, rattled, and jangled, and whipped, and cursed, and swore, and tumbled on together, until they came to Golden Square. The coachman gave a tremendous double knock at the door, which was opened long before he had done, as quickly as if there had been a man behind it, with his hand tied to the latch. Kate, who had expected no more uncommon appearance than Newman Knox in a clean shirt, was not a little astonished to see that the opener was a man in handsome livery, and that there were two or three others in the hall. There was no doubt about its being the right house, however, for there was the name upon the door, so she accepted the lace coat sleeve which was tendered her, and entering the house, was ushered upstairs, into a back drawing room, where she was left alone. If she had been surprised at the apparition of the footman, she was perfectly absorbed in amazement at the richness and splendor of the furniture. The softest and most elegant carpets, the most exquisite pictures, the costliest mirrors, articles of richest ornament, quite dazzling from their beauty and perplexing from the prodigality with which they were scattered around, encountered her on every side. The very staircase nearly down to the hall door was crammed with beautiful and luxurious things, as though the house were brimful of riches, which, with a very trifling addition, would fairly run over into the street. Presently, she heard a series of loud double knocks at the street door, and after every knock some new voice in the next room. The tones of Mr. Ralph Nickleby were easily distinguishable at first, but by degrees they merged into the general buzz of conversation, and all she could ascertain was that there were several gentlemen with no very musical voices, who talked very loud, laughed very heartily, and swore more than she would have thought quite necessary. But this was a question of taste. At length, the door opened, and Ralph himself, divested of his boots, and ceremoniously embellished with black silks and shoes, presented his crafty face. "I couldn't see you before, my dear," he said, in a low tone, and pointing, as he spoke, to the next room. "I was engaged in receiving them. Now shall I take you in?" "Pray, uncle," said Kate, a little flurried, as people much more conversant with society often are, when they are about to enter a room full of strangers, and have had time to think of it previously, "are there any ladies here?"
"No," said Ralph, shortly, "I don't know any."
"Must I go in immediately?"
Apostrophe apostrophe asked Kate, drawing back a little.
As you please, apostrophe said Ralph, shrugging his shoulders. They are all come, and dinner will be announced directly afterwards, that's all.
Apostrophe, Kate would have entreated a few minutes' respite, but reflecting that her uncle might consider the payment of the Hackney coach fare a sort of bargain for her punctuality, she suffered him to draw her arm through his, and to lead her away. Seven or eight gentlemen were standing round the fire when they went in, and, as they were talking very loud, were not aware of their entrance until Mr. Ralph Nickleby, touching one on the coat sleeve, said in a harsh emphatic voice, as if to attract general attention, "Lord Frederick Verisopht, my niece, Miss Nickleby."
Apostrophe, the group dispersed, as if in great surprise, and the gentleman addressed, turning round, exhibited a suit of clothes of the most superlative cut, a pair of whiskers of similar quality, a mustache, a head of hair, and a young face.
A. Apostrophe apostrophe said the gentleman.
What the devil?
Apostrophe, with which broken ejaculations, he fixed his glass in his eye, and stared at Miss Nickleby in great surprise.
My niece, my lord, apostrophe said Ralph.
Then my ears did not deceive me, and it's not YX work, apostrophe said his lordship.
How do you?
I'm very happy.
Apostrophe and then his lordship turned to another superlative gentleman, something older, something stouter, something redder in the face, and something longer upon town, and said in a loud whisper that the girl was devilish pity.
Apostrophe, introduce me, Nickleby, apostrophe said this second gentleman, who was lounging with his back to the fire, and both elbows on the chimney piece.
Sir Mulberry Hawk, apostrophe said Ralph.
Otherwise the most knowing card in the pack, Miss Nickleby, apostrophe said Lord Frederick Verisopht.
Don't leave me out, Nickleby, apostrophe cried a sharp-faced gentleman, who was sitting on a low chair with a high back, reading the paper.
Mr. Pike, apostrophe said Ralph.
Nor me, Nickleby, apostrophe cried a gentleman with a flushed face and a flash air, from the elbow of Sir Mulberry Hawk.
Mr. Pluck, apostrophe said Ralph.
Then wheeling about again, towards a gentleman with the neck of a stork, and the legs of no animal in particular, Ralph introduced him as the Honorable Mr. Snob, and a white-headed person at the table as Colonel Chaucer. The colonel was in conversation with somebody, who appeared to be a make-weight, and was not introduced at all.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.